Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to find out from a Central South University how curcumin shows a lot of promise against osteoporosis in their preclinical research. We're also going to talk about how long-term stress is linked to increased risk of heart attacks from the Peking University in Sweden. And we're also going to look at how cacao, which is chocolate, the flavanols in that chocolate can boost your memory, especially if you're older, Columbia University and New York University. And we're also going to look at how instant death from heart attack is far more common in people who do not exercise from the Copenhagen Hospital in Denmark. Those are some of the issues we're taking on. Plus, I'm going to do a very short overview, nothing in depth, but at least to give you an idea that certain nutrients, I believe, should be in your diet or as supplements, and why. Like, you never hear anyone talk about lithium, but they should. It does a lot of good, and I'll explain nutrients and where it works in the body, so therefore you have a chance to use those. Also today, it's commentary day. I'm going to take on several commentaries. For example, I'm going to explore today the misuse of science in the so-called pandemic, specifically the RT-PCR test. A professor, Robert Reiner Andriel, declares his resignation from the Academy of Sciences. I'm going to read you a letter that was posted by Dr. Professor Thomas Eigner, and the letters to the president of the Academy of Sciences, as well as Academy of Sciences and Literature in Mainz, in Germany. Now, mind you, it's very difficult and very rare, and it's a big honor to get involved and be in the, let's say, the National Academy of Sciences or the Royal Society. So to actively resign as a measure of protest, and you're a scientist yourself, published in multiple peer-reviewed journals, you're at the height of your reputation, shouldn't that have been picked up by the American media, and they ask, why is he resigning? What does he find wrong with the PCR test? So we're going to go into that. We're going to show you that. Also today, from Dr. Merrill Nass, NASS, a medical doctor, board certified in her field, the shameless manipulation, meaning she's giving you one of the reasons why she's concerned and thousands of other doctors are concerned. A positive PCR test, that's the test you're all taking, drops after the World Health Organization instructs vendors to lower the cycle thresholds. Quote, we have been played like a fiddle, you think? And so you're going to learn how that test you're being taken is a total, complete fraud. And by the way, this is something I can say with some authority because now, just posted yesterday, already 2,000 people have downloaded it. An hour and 52-minute interview with the developer of that test. He won the Nobel Prize for developing, Dr. Curry Mullis. Won the Nobel Prize in Chemistry in 1993 for developing it. So I flew out to California because they were using that test for AIDS diagnosis. And I said, is this legitimate? He said, no viral test. Is it going to be determined by this? You should never use the PCR for diagnosing. It's great for amplification, nothing else. You know, listen to what he has to say. He also has some choice words for Anthony Fauci and Robert Callow and the medical establishment. And by the way, Nature magazine published a completely fictitious article by him when he was a college student, but didn't publish his article when he discovered the PCR. That shows you the insanity out there. We're going to have that discussion today. Also, there's a gentleman who had a birthday. He is 107 years of age, in good health. His name is Ed. So when a friend of mine asked him, what do you attribute your 107 years of good health to? He gave some answers. I'm going to read some of his answers. I think you'll find them interesting. Why not, right? If you live to be 107 and you're in good health, someone should ask, how'd that happen? Also, the United Kingdom government is considering vaccine passports to enter shops, events, travel, and even pubs. What does that mean for someone who doesn't have that vaccine passport? Well, then you haven't had your test, which is a fraud. You haven't had your vaccine, which is experimental. Oh, and by the way, we're showing that just like in New York State, the Cuomo mob cut by half the people, even more, deaths, actual deaths that they caused in the nursing homes. But nothing is going to happen to him because he's politically connected. That's the rules of the game. You just can't get angry about it. Just realize that if you're one of the insiders, if you're in the circle of the known, I call it, and there are hundreds of thousands of people affiliated with that circle of the known, the Business Roundtable, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderberg Group, the World Trade Organization, World Health Organization, European Union Council. You can pretty much do anything and get away with it. Wasn't it the head woman at the top banking position that gave out all the loans that was found to have engaged in fraud? Nothing happened to her. She had a trial in France. How about Sarkozy? Didn't he take $60 million from Muammar Gaddafi? And wasn't it the French special forces that went in there and led the assassination of him? He didn't have to pay back that money. Didn't even have to acknowledge it. Will that come up in his trial? Probably not. So you see, you can get away with almost anything as long as you're connected. So it wouldn't have mattered if there were 100,000 dead in nursing homes due to taking people who are sick from a hospital back into the nursing home. That's the rule of it. But the fact is, and it's irrefutable, it's absolute, and we have the documentation, they lied. They covered it up. They've acknowledged that. So what? Well, guess how many people have died from the injections just this far? And it's a low count. 1,120? Wow. And we're going to hear about some of them in Germany because a whistleblower came forward to tell us. Oh, and also in The Guardian, they just reported today that do not resuscitate notices are given to the COVID patients if they have any learning disabilities. So you mean vulnerable people are encountering this shocking discrimination during a pandemic, and that doesn't seem to be of importance? I think it's very important. I don't believe you should use do not resuscitate because of someone having a learning disability. But, hey, it's Great Britain. What do you think? Let us remind the people in this audience how many people died under Churchill, and he's the most revered figure in British history. Let's start with 3.5 Bengals in India, where they had adequate food and were taking the food from the most fertile parts of India and shipping it out of India, not giving it to them. Do you want me to add 3,000 more things they've done wrong, showing a lack of sensitivity to human life? I got more than 3,000 we could tell you about. But for right now, hey, any government that would allow a do not resuscitate because you have some learning disabilities is a contemptible operation, and everyone associated with it that supports it, from the media to the population to those who are responsible. I'm sure there'll be a pushback because no crime against humanity that I consider that severe can go without some challenge. And there are very good people within Great Britain to challenge those injustices. So that's our show today. And if time permits, I also have I have Becoming an Essentialist. What does that mean? It's interesting. I will play that. And remember, if you want PRN's free newsletter to keep you up to date on everything, just go to prnstudio@gmail.com and you'll be able to sign up and get it for free. But we always start with the latest on health and healing. Curcumin, which is the active ingredient in turmeric, and is very important at helping turn off inflammation in the body. It's very good for people with arthritis, rheumatism, gout. It's very good for people who want to prevent cancer, who have cancer. It's good for the epithelial lining of your arteries. I mean, it's a superstar. Thousands of articles on it. Well, here's just the latest, and it shows that that when you have a problem with your skeleton, with osteoporosis, curcumin is good to help prevent that. So that's what this study shows, and that's terrific. Also from Limgarving University in Sweden, there's a look at long-term stress, and boy, are we into long-term stress right now. They're saying it leads to heart attacks. Most people would probably answer in the affirmative, but the scientific evidence is so scarce. So a new study by researchers from the university in Sweden reveals that the levels of the stress hormone cortisol, C-O-R-T-I-S-O-L, were increased in the months preceding a heart attack. The results published in scientific reports suggest that long-term stress, meaning over several months, is a big-time risk factor for heart attacks. One more reason why. Whenever possible, take a trip out of the city. Now, almost every city right now, and we're heard everywhere in this country. In fact, in our webinar, I think I was told we had people listening from 167 different cities, multiple people listening from New York and New Jersey cities, but all over the country, almost every state. You all have places that you can get to in your immediate surroundings. In New York, you can just go to any of the dozen or more great parks, Prospect Park in Brooklyn and Central Park, of course, New York, and hang out. Or if you're in the country, great because you're around green and trees. If you're near the ocean, go for a walk. Of course, I'm not asking you to do this in inclement weather, but when the weather is nice enough, take it in because that can lower your stress hormone cortisol. Holding hands, giving hugs, just sitting quietly and enjoying someone's presence. That energy, that indelible connection where we harmonize our energies, that lowers cortisol, that de-stresses us. Watching comedies, laughing. Now, you can't watch any of the comedy shows now on night because none of them are funny. Am I the only person who realizes none of them are funny? I mean, none of them are funny. Don Rinkles, he was funny. You know, Jonathan Winters, he was a hoot and original and funny. Robin Williams, he was funny. You know, and probably the funniest of them all because he was also the most insightful, George Carlin. But today, they try to be urbane and insightful, have some meaning, but don't laugh. Wow. What a bunch of dunderheads. But when you laugh, when you watch a Marx Brothers film, you can laugh. W.C. Fields, hilarious. That reduces your stress hormones. That stimulates your immune system. So petting your dog, your cat, spending time with outdoors, going, let's say, to a farm. I know a lot of people have told me in this audience, they went out to Mennonite country or Amish country for a week. They paid some small amount and they were able to live on a farm and see what life's like. And it's just the pace of life, slow, methodical, and very bucolic, very rural. They have their own rules. It's not about, you know, is their religion the right religion? That's not it. It's just how they live. That distresses. So stress is a natural part of life, but there's a lot we don't know about the effects of long-term stress on our bodies. It is well known that sudden emotional or physical stress, such as natural disasters or similar serious events, can trigger heart attacks. But what about when it's longer, when you're in a toxic relationship, or you don't like where you work, or you're getting on a subway now, and who wouldn't be concerned on a subway? All the slashings and killings and pushings on the track, the lawlessness, the murders, the muggings. Wow. And it's happening in the daytime at any time. So yeah, there are some reasons to be concerned about your neighborhood. And let me just say this very quickly. I dealt with this on last Sunday in the webinar about getting off the grid in depth. It was one piece of the puzzle. When I lecture, I use pieces of a puzzle and I go into greater depth and then you it's up to you to connect the pieces as you see that you can based upon your own belief system. But as I said, right now the property values have dropped tremendously in New York from 30% to 300%. The more expensive a property, the greater the drop. The assumption is if someone can afford $20 million for an apartment or a brownstone, and if they have to take a 300% drop in what they were asking, they can still afford it. That may or may not be true. But the average is 50%. So if you want to live in Manhattan or Brooklyn or some of the other nice neighborhoods in the boroughs, you couldn't afford it before. Now many people can. That's good. So we're not going to have a vacancy problem. In fact, there's more people seeking to buy places than there are places to sell. What I stated is that that will not fundamentally change the quality of life in the city, meaning that you used to be down at Lincoln Center because of the culture down in the West, down in Tribeca or the other wonderful enclaves that had their own unique signature. They were monikered for this is where you want to go if you're an artist down the Lower East Side, St. Mark's Place, Alphabet City. Those are all gentrified. They've lost a lot of their character, but there's still places around the city that still have character. But they had anchors. Now those anchors are pretty much gone, and buildings are going bankrupt. As a result, there's the small shops that made neighborhoods wonderful. They're not coming back. Not now. There will be a long time before they venture in, because even though the rents are going down, again, 50 or 60%, because the risk you take, if you don't have enough people who have the money, then that's the problem. Many of the people coming in are professional, younger people who don't go out and spend all the money outside of their apartment. They order a lot of stuff in. So the whole dynamics of being commercial in a neighborhood are changed. Changed forever, in my opinion. Anyhow, the city will not die. It will simply not be back to what it was. And, you know, if you want to know what that's like, why don't you ask any of the Heisman Trophy winners, people who've won the Super Bowl or the NBA, and 10 years after they've retired, when they look in the mirror, what do they see? When they go out for a jog, how's it feel? Things change. And that's unfortunate. I was just thinking this morning about, I remember I had a retreat down in Texas in 1991, and there was just a wonderful group of people, and as it turns out, a lot of them were artists. Why? They came, I don't know, they came spend, it was supposed to be a week, and a lot of them said, can we stay? And we were having so much fun. And sure, they stayed a month. I had to get back to the city, and the staff had to get back, and we had a big staff. But I remember probably half the people were artists in different fields, and we had a hayride. And we had Clydesdale horses and Morgans. These are huge horses. And we had 16 people, and there were a whole team of horses and the driver. Everybody got on the bales of hay and went all over the property, about a two-hour ride. And people just said, this is so much fun. And then I thought, wow, someone back then who was 25, now they're about almost 60. How do they look? How do they feel? What's happened in their life? What are the choices they've made that have given them a positive or a negative outcome? So that's what we're dealing with. We have to understand if we don't choose our methods of living, if we don't spend time asking ourselves quietly and with conscious focus, what is the likely outcome if I do A or B or C or D, then project ahead. And what do you think is going to happen? Will you feel differently? Will you be healthier or more sick? So now people are getting to the age, including in this audience, where that's all added up. And a lot of people are tipping. And what do I do? What do I do? Well, I'm telling you right now, the first thing you should do is get into peaceful environments. Get off the grid. Your life is more valuable than just making an artificial standard of living to be in a toxic or dangerous environment. In the big cities, Los Angeles, San Francisco, New York, Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Chicago, not coming back in the near future. They won't die. They'll just change. Not for the better, unfortunately. That's going to be up to you. Just understand that stress is the cyanide killer. It can force up your blood pressure, and it goes into the brain. Cortisol goes in the brain and attacks your neurons, and that you don't want. Also, the cacao, which are the chocolate, the raw chocolate, it's loaded with flavanols, and those are able to boost memory in older adults. This is from both Columbia University and New York University. They did a study, clinical study, published in Scientific Reports. So having a 2-ounce piece of chocolate each day is good for memory and good for thinking, good for your cognition. That's important because they used a placebo versus the intake. By the way, they didn't even use the amount I'm suggesting. They were still under a gram. So I'm suggesting it's 20.35 ounces, let's say grams to an ounce. So 2 ounces would be great. Now, also from Copenhagen Hospital, this was published in the European Journal of Preventive Cardiology. They're saying that instant death from heart attacks is far more common if you don't exercise. So the answer, start exercising. Oh, by the way, from the University of Malay in Malaysia, coconut oil improves memory and brain function. So in our age of science, it's the new religion, and science experts are the high priest. Empirical evidence is considered anecdotal and dismissed or marginalized. But coconut oil has a lot of empirical evidence showing how it prevents or reverses dementia, and which some consider diabetes 3 or diabetes of the brain. No matter how many of these stories surface, mainstream media constantly refers to experts who insist on demanding studies only. It seems the medical field needs to know how something works with detailed explanations rather than relying upon the observable empirical fact that people using coconut oil can prevent or recover from dementia or other neurological issues. So this was a study that was done at the Y-Star Institute, and an in vivo study, and it showed improvement in those areas. So one more reason to use coconut oil. Raw organic coconut oil is fine. And so that's the latest on health and healing. We are 23 minutes into our program. We're going to take a break, and we're going to come back. And I'm going to share a letter from Meryl Nass. She's been on the program about the PCR test. But before then, I'm going to show you a man who resigned from one of the most prestigious institutions in the world because of the fraud of using the PCR test as a diagnostic tool. And then, like the New York Times and these other people, saying, oh, positive cases. No, not positive cases. These are just people who tested positive on a test that is enormously inaccurate. We'll lay this all out for you in just a moment. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome you all. I'm Gary Nall. Richard Gale is standing by. We'll go to him in a few moments. But I'm going to quote verbatim, and we're posting this up on prn.fm. All of these important documents we have reviewed to make sure they are accurate. They come from quality sources, so you can go up and download the document for yourself. These are not given as opinion pieces. This one is from Professor Reiner Adderall, and it's, quote, declaring his resignation from the Academy of Sciences. And it says the following: I feel very strongly alarmed by several points. One, a group of 22 internationally renowned experts submitted the following expert opinion on the PCR test, the linchpin of the pandemic, for the journal Eurosurveillance. Quote, external peer review of the PCR test to detect SARS-2 reveals 10 major scientific flaws at the molecular and methodological level, consequences for false positive results. Quote, These highly questions the scientific validity of the test, end quote. Furthermore, the serious remark, quote, serious conflicts of interest of the authors are not mentioned, end quote. Two, the PCR test is the basis of the justification for declaring a pandemic. And RKI, politicians, and the media announce the positive test results daily as so-called new infections. According to the 22 independent experts, the test contains, quote, several scientific inadequacies, errors, and flaws. It is clearly stated, quote, the test is unsuitable. Let me repeat this. Listen, everyone. We've independently verified this. Quote, the test is unsuitable as a specific diagnostic tool to identify the SARS-2 virus and make inferences about the presence of an infection, end quote. It is not obvious that there is an extremely serious problem here, which should actually shake the whole pandemic. I cannot understand why neither the Leopoldina nor other academies institutions include this well-founded expert opinion and demand or initiate a further, thorough, and scientifically clean clarification. Three, based upon the pandemic, which is based upon at least a very questionable test, a worldwide vaccination campaign is now to be started on an unprecedented scale, and this with vaccines that have never been tested before and that have been developed at an unprecedented speed. In light of the first reported serious side effects, and after warnings from renowned experts, it is clear that the completely novel RNA vaccines have been far from adequately tested, especially with regards to long-term effects. Why are the academics silent on such essential issues? Four, problematic aspects of the statements being made, including a German newspaper, in a scathing analysis, quote, the damage done by the science functionaries is immense, end quote. Initially, there are currently several statements by medical practitioners that are diametrically opposed to the scientific paper. For example, the chair of the board of the National Association of Statutory Health Insurance Physicians, Professor Gasson, expects that the hard lockdown now ordered will, quote, fail the infectiologist, Professor Schrappe, declares the entire lockdown policy a definite failure. I'd hope that the Academy of Sciences and Literature, and MENS, as an important sister organization of the National Academy of Sciences, would make a critical statement on these statements. Regrettably, this has not happened so far. Are not the academies the guardians of pure science and also the freedom of the sciences? Aren't the venerable academies particularly challenged in a scientific landscape that is increasingly characterized by third-party funding and the massive influence of powerful lobby interests, such as the pharmaceutical industry? Is it really the task of an academy such as this to fuel the scaremongering of the media and the politics? Where is the board discourse that used to be customary, with a balanced assessment of the sometimes very contradictory statements by science? Reaction from the academics when, in recent months, the voices of proven experts who articulate an assessment that deviates from the one-size-fits-all narrative, indeed in some cases diametrically contradicts it, are repeatedly ignored, marginalized, even defamed, censored, and deleted from social media. Why no reaction by the academics? If the right to freedom of science and freedom of expression, which is guaranteed in the basic law, as well as other fundamental rights, are trampled, has Germany learned nothing from its history? After the governments refer to this, from my point of view, very disastrous paper of the National Academy of Sciences when imposing a renewed hard lockdown, as well as because of the points listed above, I have decided after careful consideration to take the certainty I cannot reconcile with my conscience to be a part of this kind of science. I want to serve a science that is committed to fact-based honesty, balanced transparency, and comprehensive humanity. And by the way, this was also reviewed by Professor Berchtold Hildebrand, Vice President of Mathematical and Natural Science class, and members of the Mathematical and Natural Science class of the MENS Academy of Sciences. So, and he sent it to the president of the National Academy of Sciences of their country. So there's one brave person who looked at the science and said, this is all wrong, I'm not going to accept this. Now here's one more to follow up. This is from Dr. Meryl Nass. She is both a medical doctor, board certified in her field, but she also is a great researcher. I'm going to quote her verbatim because it ties directly into that resignation. Shameless manipulation, positive PCR tests drop after World Health Organization instructs vendors to lower the cycle thresholds. We have been played like a fiddle. Hospitalization rates associated with COVID have dropped from a high of 132,500 Americans on January 6th to 71,500 on February 12th. The U.S. had 920,000 staffed hospital beds in 2019, of which 14.4% harbored a COVID case last month and 7.8% do now. This tremendous drop was predicted. Every hospitalized patient is tested for COVID, often repeatedly, using PCR tests with high false positive rates. False positives are due in considerable part to exorbitant cycle thresholds. This refers to the maximum number of doublings that are allowed during the test. The problem caused by excessive cycle thresholds was well described in a New York Times article last August, but has otherwise been ignored by the mass media. Dr. Sin-Hang Lee challenged the FDA's reliance on exorbitant cycle thresholds and its acceptance of efficacy claims by Pfizer's vaccine in early December. He had FDA remain engaged in this debate. The World Health Organization instructed PCR test users and manufacturers on December 14th and again on January 20th that PCR cycle thresholds needed to come down. The December 14th guidance stated World Health Organization concerns, quote, now mind you, what I'm saying now is from the World Health Organization, quote, an elevated risk of false SARS-2 results, end quote, and pointed, quote, background noise, which may lead to a specimen with a high cycle threshold value result being incorrectly interpreted as a positive result, end quote. The first instruction has been superseded by the second, which additionally advises on clinical use of the test. If, quote, the test results do not correspond with the clinical presentation, a new specimen should be taken and retested, end quote. While this implies that the test should only be performed in those with symptoms and its results should be interpreted with the clinical context in mind, most PCR tests in the United States are used very differently to screen asymptomatics at work, at colleges, universities, permit border crossings, etc. No caution is applied to the results. One single positive test defines someone as a COVID case, yet it is well known and well acknowledged in the World Health Organization's January guidance that screening in low COVID prevalence situations, such as the screening of asymptomatics, increase the risk of false positives. And the risk increases if the prevalence of disease drops, such as in situations of low disease prevalence, it is common to find that most positives are actually false positive. For example, see the British Medical Journal chart and then the real-life example in the comment below. Everyone in the field knew that the PCR test results were bogus. Even Tony Fauci admitted last July that cycle thresholds above 35 were not measuring virus, and furthermore, that virus could not be cultured from the samples that required a high number of cycles to show positivity. But the drumbeat from the Coronavirus Task Force and some academics and others was, quote, test all, test often, despite the inordinate number of false positives and negatives. Congress repeatedly allocated many billions of dollars for testing, often free for the person being tested, and so testing quickly mushroomed. Nearly 2 million COVID tests a day were recorded in the United States over the last 3 months. Most of these have been with PCR tests, which, despite their problems, are still considered the most accurate. Most of the remaining tests performed were rapid antigen tests. These tests, too, suffer from high false positive rates, as the FDA warned last November. And while daily deaths have only dropped about 15% since January, there have been dramatic drops during the month in new cases, down 60% from 250,000 new cases a day, and also noted in hospitalizations, down 46%. And however, none of these numbers are reliable. In addition to inaccurate PCR results, a variety of other measures were skewed, have skewed the reported number of deaths from COVID. And and it goes on from there. The whole report is up on PRN.fm for you to download and read it for yourself so you can see what we're talking about. But what she's saying is that the PCR test is not accurate. And we know it's not accurate for diagnosing a viral infection because the developer of the test is now up on PRN.fm in an hour and 50-minute interview where you can read that for yourself. All right, so all this pandemic, all these lockdowns, all these cases, this is all fraud. The virus is real. People have died. But people who would normally, with comorbidities, die, and those are people in nursing homes, assisted living centers, hospice care, critical care in hospitals, or at home with comorbidities. Not a single thing has been done, not a single thing to help those people overcome their comorbidities or to teach people how to keep themselves healthy by building up their immune system. That, to me, is a crime against humanity because probably 80% of the people could have been helped, not hospitalized, not died, had we had a program that cared more about people's health than making profits for the pharmaceutical industry. Richard Gale's online now. Richard, would you address some of these issues that are important?
Yeah, well, one of the things is the point we were really considering is the efficacy of the hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin. It's not being brought about either. There is a lot of evidence right now on the efficacy of both of these, and it seems like certainly ivermectin has a better efficacy rate and provides much greater safety than the hydroxychloroquine with the azithromycin and zinc combination, although those are also being given as well with the ivermectin. Vitamin D, we're seeing, is important because so many people who come down with the worst cases of the virus are vitamin D deficient. So that's what is that the area you want me to address, Gary?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So if we're just looking at the ivermectin alone, there's been 40 meta-analysis studies as of now that shows an 81% reduction in the effects of from the infection. And as for using it prophylactically, like if you are asymptomatic, you perhaps, let's say, you test positive and it is a real positive, who knows? But so you use it prophylactically, then there is an 89% chance that you will not become symptomatic in any way. It's been showing a 78% lower mortality rate among those who are being treated in serious conditions with the virus. So, there's research I see that's still coming out but largely this is being sponsored and funded. When you look at the conflicts of interest in the research papers that are published in the peer-reviewed medical literature, you find these conflicts of interest all over the place, particularly in the studies coming out of the United States, because these the universities and the institutional laboratories rely so heavily on the funding now from the private corporations and from the National Institutes of Health and the CDC to be able to conduct these studies. So there are these conflicts of interest that are almost embedded in all these studies that we're coming out with that are trying to discredit ivermectin in favor of these new novel drugs that are being developed and designed right now. And the same is kind of true with the hydroxychloroquine. You know, and both of these drugs are just so inexpensive. They're cheap, which is why they're being used throughout the developing countries that can't afford these, like the Remdesivir and these others that Anthony Fauci has been touting for all these past months now. But with the hydroxychloroquine, we're finding a reduction of 66%. So it doesn't seem to be quite as effective as the ivermectin. In the randomized controlled trials, there's positive effects of approximately 91%. That's kind of rather similar to that of the ivermectin. And the prospective study reports are showing an 88% positive effect. So, again, unfortunately, it's some states make it easier than others to gain access to ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. New York and New Jersey are two of the worst. Well,
New York and New Jersey are just terrible about everything. They're so corrupt.
Right.
Well,
right.
Next Tuesday on the Progressive Commentary, not today, because tonight is going to be a one-hour commentary by me on how to deal with taking back control of your life. I think it'll be a very strong, motivating discussion for people who are feeling a little out of sorts or not quite aware what to do, what choices they have. The whole hour is going to be on positive insights into the conditions we're facing in our own lives. Next Tuesday night, however, we have the leading lawyer who is suing the German government and different organizations because he was the one who got the background on the person that got the patent in Germany on this new PCR, and it's just junk science. And so he is going after them. He'll be on for the full hour next week, right?
Yes, yes. Reiner Fuelmick is his name. And if anybody wants to, you can Google him as well. So, and he's also, and this is kind of a lead up to a much larger global lawsuit, international lawsuit that will be targeting the World Health Organization as well.
It's and time.
Bobby
That's a very
Bobby and Bobby Kennedy's working with him too at the American end. So,
you know what was interesting? Bobby Kennedy was recently banned on some websites, and they claimed that he had disinformation. And in point of fact, he responded and said, "Every single claim I'm making comes from the Library of Medicine's PubMed. These are qualified studies. You can disagree with them, but they're there. He's not making stuff up." But you see that no matter what argument you give, they had the power just to censor you, to gaslight you, and destroy you in Wikipedia and other organizations that are there acting at the behest of people other than the people contacting them because they only have bad things to say about everything in the alternative health field. And Kennedy is now labeled in there because not that he's anti-vaccine, it's just he questions what has happened with the vaccines like the Gardasil vaccine, and he's in a major lawsuit now representing people who've been harmed. And by the way, he was one of the attorneys representing the person who won against Monsanto. So he's someone we should pay attention to because he's been on the right side of the law and the issues. And yet, for the major media, he's persona non grata. He can't appear anywhere. Thank you very much, Richard.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so we got a powerful show next Tuesday evening. And I'm going to let it run for as long as that interview needs. So if it's 1 hour, fine. If it goes longer, fine also. I want to mention something about this 97-year-old gentleman and his birthday. His name's Ed, 107, still in good health. And he likes affirmations. He likes to think about the problems and think of a simple solution. Here's some that he gave, just a few. And this keeps him focused. He says, "Friendship is like a book. It takes a few seconds to burn, but it takes years to write." I would agree with that. He says, "All things in life are temporary. If they are going well, enjoy them. They will not last forever. If they're going wrong, don't worry. They can't last forever or very long either. Old friends are like gold. New friends are diamonds. If you get a diamond, don't forget the gold. To hold a diamond, you always need a base of gold." So I like that too. And he says, "Often we lose hope and think this is the end." And he says, "No, relax. It's just a bend in the road, not the end of the road." And this was one of the more interesting ones. He said, "A blind person asked God, 'Can there be anything worse than losing your eyesight?' And he replied, 'Yes, losing your vision.'" So a couple of the things that he said that is why he believes he lives a longer life. He keeps focused on what's important, keeps it simple, doesn't complicate issues. Good for him. Oh, and by the way, I put a trailer of the film, so you can watch a coming attraction of the new film opening worldwide, one showing only. It's by the Society for International Investigative Journalists, and it's narrated by Celia Farber. And for me, it's interesting because all these interviews, all these documents that someone had to find, people had to find, and put them together to show that at the height of the AIDS epidemic back in the 1980s, mind you, I was working on AIDS before it was called AIDS in the mid-1970s. And so I've been in a long time. In any case, survivors, patients who were cured of their AIDS, doctors, nurses, journalists from around the world, all filmed, all interviewed. And it's about there was a cure for AIDS and it was covered up. Everyone involved was attacked. No one would let any of this information out. Nobody was Anthony Fauci. And the power at the National Cancer Institute, the mainstream media knew because they were all invited to come look at the results, with the patient's permission, they all gave their permission, look at the medical records, bring your doctors, bring your scientists. And some did. Tony Brown did. Months of research and materials, as did Bill McCurry and Bill Tatum, the publisher of the largest African-American newspaper. In fact, Bill was so impressed, he started getting treatment himself and later sponsored a 3-day sold out. Well, it didn't cost anyone anything. It was free. But every seat was filled in the upstairs, downstairs Apollo Theater where I went up to lecture and on AIDS. Now, mind you, I really wasn't talking about AIDS. I was talking about the immune system. And so the protocols I created were able to keep 1,200 people alive, but also it reversed AIDS in HIV in the people that took the advanced protocol. I'm going to be talking about the advanced protocol, but there's going to be journalists, there's going to be doctors, scientists. After the showing, there's going to be a panel. Also, we're going to be playing some clips because the people who mismanaged the war on AIDS are mismanaging the war on COVID. The lessons we could have learned to save millions of lives with the war on AIDS, we're also making the same mistake, but now you at least will know what you can do about COVID or any other immune-related condition. So it's very upbeat. It's very positive, but it's honest also. You'll hear from C.F. Farber's narration. They dug deep, found some whistleblowers who went on the record talking about the lies about AZT. And again, Fauci handled all the money. If you wanted something that was natural, non-toxic, not a penny. If you wanted to promote a toxic drug, an antiretroviral, all the money. And they built a whole political apparatus, exactly what they're doing today with COVID. It's virtually identical. Different virus, same mismanagement, same selfishness, same self-interest. So that's why it's so timely, very timely. So if you want to join me, it's Sunday the 28th, that's 2 Sundays from now, noon. Now, every one of my webinars is packed, everyone, as are the lectures. So if you want to come, go to GaryNall.com or PRN.fm, and you can sign in. And watch the trailer, watch the coming attractions. Or you can call the office if you have any questions, and Jessica is there to answer your questions at 646-926-5422. Also, I got a kind of a cryptic letter, email from Linda Perry, the program director, who said that she spoke with Berthold Reimers and that the station cannot make its payroll. And he believes that the station is in jeopardy of closing down WBAI in 2 weeks if it cannot get sources of money. Someone sent me an article, and I'm going to resurface that article and invite him on to talk about this because it's all about Pacifica and how it was captured in a coup and mismanaged ever since. And that's why we're where today. Anyhow, I don't know how accurate it is, if it was just hyperbole, some exaggeration, but I do believe that the station is desperate for funds. So what we're doing to help the station, we are doing a retreat, and where a normal book or video would be able to help the station by about 5 or 10 premiums. Each person who comes to retreat, since it's a fundraiser for WBAI, we can buy hundreds, and we do. Thousands upon thousands we've purchased. So the station gets the money, but doesn't have to use it except for the expenses, and I'll advance them depending upon how many people. So at least they'll have some money to pay their payroll. So Michael G. Haskins and some of the small staff member, small, very small staff, like I think 7 or 8 people, can still function. I don't want to see a station I've been on for 45 years go off the air. Anyhow, the retreat is, boy, you talk about being in nature, you're in nature. You're in beauty. We have a wonderful staff, lectures I'm flying in from around the United States, personal counseling, detox, rejuvenation, cleansing, all in a safe environment, exercising, water aerobics. It'll be in the 80s. Thousands and thousands of roses, a butterfly house, beehives, hydroponics, going crazy, showing people, yeah, this is the future. So we got a lot going on. It's a wonderful experience. If you'd like to join us, you can call Lou Anne Panessi. She is interviewing people to make sure that it's right for them. And I'll give you Lou Anne's number, and then you can give her a call and tell her what your interests are. Because I don't diagnose or treat anybody. And it's not for angry, negative people. It's for people who want to rejuvenate, to refocus, to see that there are solutions beyond their dilemmas and problems, to move beyond their crisis and dramas and traumas, to exhilarate, because a lot of good information is going to be shared. The last one, I did 53 lectures. I don't know how many I'm going to do this time. Luann's number is 903-881-7008, 903-881-7008. Now, we're coming up to the end of the program from WBAI in another minute. However, for the rest of you, I'm going to play a little bit of this segment, Becoming an Essentialist, just the beginning of it, for about 8 minutes. But again, in another 60 seconds, BAI will be signing off. And again, we're going to do all we can to help BAI survive. It's helped a lot of people. And by the way, the establishment would love to see BAI gone. This administration would love to see it gone, because the station is not a supporter of oligarchy, arrogant, narcissistic leaders, no matter who that person is, hegemony, imperialism, and all that comes from the military-industrial complex, the pharmaceutical-industrial complex. The station is a voice, a beacon for people who are going against the mainstream media. So, yeah, they'd love to see it silenced. We want to see its voice continue. All right, thank you for listening on WBAI. Now we're going to go to one part of Becoming an Essentialist.
Most of the stuff that's going on is not vital. It's a trivial many versus the vital few. And I think it's not just one more thing to figure out what those vital few things are. It is the work of life.
Greg McKeown is the author of the New York Times bestselling book, Essentialism: The Disciplined Pursuit of Less. In the book, Greg describes an approach similar to minimalism that gets us to ask the right questions about where we're spending our time, energy, and effort. This is my edited conversation with Greg about his essentialist philosophy, the myth of success, and why small, consistent steps far outweigh the alternative. You can get the full one-hour interview on Patreon. Enjoy. Greg, thanks so much for being here. Really excited to talk with you, talking about the crossover between less and ambition. So how can we do more with less? Before we delve too deep into that, tell me a little bit about the work you do right now. Give me a little bit of an introduction.
I wrote the book Essentialism,
This is about the disciplined, continual, perpetual pursuit of less but better. I love how you just framed it as less but with ambition. It's about how to figure out what is essential, eliminate what's not, and create a system for making it as effortless as possible to do what you've identified as being very important.
When I look at our culture, I would say in America, but I'm sure it's spread pretty far, there is this work hard, hustle, grind it out, busyness that is promoted. And in a lot of ways, people, they enjoy attaching this label to themselves. I'm so busy. Oh, I'm just overwhelmed with all this stuff that I have to do. How do you view our hustle culture today? And is that something that as you would describe it as?
When I first came to America, I would ask people how they are. And we're talking almost 20 years ago. And they would say, they'd say, I'm great. I'm great. And it was almost like, I'm American. Of course, I'm great. And I liked it. I liked this sort of inherent optimism and positivity. I connected to that. I related to that. But if you ask people now, as often as not, when you ask them how they are now, the first word will be busy. I'm busy. I'm so busy. I'm good, but I'm busy. I'm busy, busy. I mean, this whole flavors of busy. And so I do think that something has changed. It's not just in our own minds. Something has significant has changed. And even in those years, I think we've gone from being connected to hyperconnected. And that's not a small change in the human condition. It shifts from a place where sometimes we had information overload. Yes, we've had that for a long time, but we're now in a state of opinion overload. And so this is particularly the kind of busyness that I think is most potentially harmful, is where we're busy not because we just have a sense of internal mission that matters, a sense of contribution that we want to make in the world. It's that we're busy because other people are busy. We're doing things because other people are doing stuff. We see them on social media. Oh, that person's doing this thing. They're in that place. They're pursuing this idea. And so keeping up with the Joneses has been a deep part of human nature, I'm sure, forever. But when you add into it this hyper connection, this hyper comparison, then I think it gets to the point where people do feel pretty crazy all the time. So that people feel busy, but not productive. They feel stretched too thin at work or at home, but they don't feel a sense of accomplishment with it. They feel instead a constant sense of other people hijacking their agenda. You know, and so this is the problem. The problem isn't that you have a lot to do.
LA is obviously a very busy place.
Exactly, this is like the perfect moment for it. It's not just that you have a lot to do. It's that you're being defined by this constant reactive comparison. This, I think, is really the issue.
It's a badge of honor for a lot of people. I remember when I was getting started out as a filmmaker. And a lot of the people that I surrounded myself with, who I thought were good mentors, talked about how they will sleep when they're dead. That working hard is the most important thing. That if they only got 4 to 5 hours of sleep or less, that's okay because they got the job done. That you can smile and be happy once you have the money, once you have the success. Mm. Is this something that you've seen? Because you've worked with a lot of startup and tech companies. This kind of culture, is it heightened there in certain environments where maybe it's entrepreneurial driven or people are trying to create something for themselves?
Yes. I mean, I think that, I mean, this is where I first observed the phenomenon, which is that working with Silicon Valley companies, I noticed that, in the early days of a company, they would be, you know, maybe have a state of clarity, a certain clarity, a sense of this is what we're trying to do. And this is who we are, and this is who we aren't, and this is what we're not trying to do. And so they would have that clarity. If they got that clarity, it would drive success. And with the success would come an increase of options and opportunities. And that sounds like the right problem to have. That whole pattern, everything I just described, But it did in fact turn out to be a problem if all of that opportunity, those options, if it pulls you into what Jim Collins has called the undisciplined pursuit of more.
Very important and insightful information. That's just part one. We have four more parts to share next on our next several programs. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.